You are listening to Geek a Week.
Geek a Week. Geek a Week. La 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 la. Geek a Week.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to Geek a Week. I am your host, Len Peralta. This is the podcast portion of the Art Project, where I'm trying to connect with 55 geeks in 55 weeks and draw them as trading cards. Now, before we start, I want to mention, of course, you know that Geek Week is an art project. It's also a podcast project, and it's also a video project. But the coolest thing about this project is that you can purchase these trading cards of all the geeks I've been talking to for this season, Season 5. Plus, you can also purchase the full season of Season 1, which will be a collectible card game as well. You want to know how to do that? Well, all you have to do is stay tuned at the end of this podcast, and I'll tell you all you need to know on how to pre-order seasons 1, 2, and get seasons 2, 3, and 4, too. So there you go. Continuing with the theme of Artist Month, of course, you know this month is Artist Month. I've been showcasing some great people who are drawers, as you may know. Now, you may notice that a lot of the quote-unquote artists I'm showcasing are much more than that, and today's geek is, of course, no exception to that rule. He is the creator of the fan-favorite cult webcomic called Brood Hollow, which, incidentally, was just singled out by the website IO9 as one of a handful of webcomics that would make great TV shows. If you're not looking at Brood Hollow, you must put your eyes on it immediately. He is also the co-host of the podcast Chainsaw Suit with fellow Geek a Weeker Mikey Newman, and I have the great honor of collaborating with him and Mike on a new comic called Exterminite, which will be out very, very soon. Would you please welcome to Geek a Week cartoonist, designer, and self-proclaimed humor scientist, Mr. Chris Straub.
All right.
You will sound great then. That'll be.
I'm on my dad's soup can. He let me borrow it, and
that's happened sometimes. You know, I have to remind people that, like, you know, we want this to sound good, and you know.
I asked Mikey what I for some reason I thought this would be like edited and collated and like and not actually a podcast fully. You know what I mean? Like being interviewed for a newspaper.
Oh, gotcha. No, this is more fun. Did he tell you? Did he let you in on all the questions already?
No, he did not. Okay, I didn't know you had told him questions. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this I'll do the whole spiel. So, well, this is good. I'm so glad. I'm glad we're able to hook up and do this. I think this is going to be really cool. By the way, it's great to meet you. I don't think we've ever talked in person.
No, it's great to meet you. I regretted not being able to make it out when you were in Seattle.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's hard because it's only. There were only like 70,000 people downtown when I was there. That was for the Seahawks thing.
Right.
And then I was only there for like 24 hours or something.
So I'm fine with you saying it's your fault.
It is
I'm
my
okay
fault.
With that.
it's all my fault. And I'll probably never, ever come back to Seattle ever again.
Well, I just want you to know I did my best.
And your best wasn't good enough.
So. And it didn't make it. Yeah.
So this is the Geek Week interview, Chris. And here's the spiel. I read this to everybody. The Geek Week interview should take about 20 or 30 minutes. Yeah, about 20 minutes. Don't feel like you have to rush. I'd rather this be a good conversation than anything else. Actually, I should say it should take about 20 minutes. But don't clip your answers. You know,
I'm worried I'll go long. So
that's
no,
all right. That's fine. Yeah. I'd rather this be a good conversation than anything else. I ask the same questions to everyone I talk to with some slight variations. So, for example, the interview I gave to Mikey is about the same, although I did ask him some questions that were more personalized to him, which I think may have offended him. I don't know, but...
Well, he's real easy to offend. He's got a real temper on this guy.
Yeah, it worked out well, though. We're friends, and we left friends. But that in mind, if you're ready, I'm ready.
Yeah, I think if you like the sound of my levels... I think we're good.
I love it. I think you sound terrific.
Excellent. I've actually got a little, I feel like I've lost my voice a little as after Emerald City Comic Con, so that I can get a little.
I love that.
Gravelly.
I actually start each morning by screaming my head off so that by the midday I sound so nice and sultry. It's great.
I'm out of cigarettes, so I got 2 or 3 packs in and it's a golden tone, but I don't have any today.
Do you really smoke?
No, I don't.
Oh my gosh. I was going to say, that's something that people don't really admit to anymore. You know, like it's more,
they don't. It's kind of a bummer to learn. Like it shouldn't be. It's like, well, it's your choice, but it's like, oh, really? Okay.
No, people, they sort of hide behind like walls.
Yeah.
They're like behind short walls smoking.
We've cast them out. I mean, we don't let them do it in the building anymore. So no. It doesn't surprise me that they feel like they have to hide.
You're not allowed in here. You must go outside.
Yeah.
They're a second-class citizen, unfortunately. But
yeah, third, if I had it my way.
Third. Just put them in a box.
In the packing.
Put them in a box and, like, drill holes so they can breathe out of them. That's all. That's all. That's how they should be treated.
All right, guys. Sorry you love nicotine.
Okay, we're about to start, but this is for the listening audience. I have noticed over the past couple years of doing editing up these podcasts that awesome is my go-to word. And I started really noticing it when I was editing on these podcasts. Perhaps you guys have noticed it as well. So for that, I will be replacing the word awesome with a new word. And I invite you to do this with me, Chris, too. Do you use the word awesome a lot?
I don't. I actually despise it. I think it's too much of a catch-all. So I do whatever I can to use any other adjective.
I know.
I'm also very difficult to excite.
Oh my
God. So I'm likely to go, that's not bad. Like that's as high level as it gets.
Oh my gosh. No, it was like my go-to word. So now I'm editing up these podcasts. I'm like, every time I hear the word awesome, it's like a sting to my side. So I am going to replace the word awesome in this conversation with the word great. And you got to say it like that. Great.
Okay. I can get in on that. That's kind of sounds like what I would do anyway.
Great.
It's a little condescending.
It is a little bit condescending. I wanted to do the Tony the Tiger thing, but I think, you know, this is great. So
there we go.
Okay, so here we go. This is going to be great. Chris, you've been chosen as a Geek a Week. How does this make you feel?
I feel awesome.
You just broke the first rule of the podcast.
I'm sorry. That's what I do. I'm very excited. I will tell you this. I think that, and this probably holds true for a lot of people, they look at something like Geek a Week, and they say, well, that's cool. And they also think, why am I not on there? And then as time goes on, you start thinking, Ben, that's really cool. I'm glad that he's doing that stuff. Why am I not on there? Why is this? This is not okay. And so it just builds and builds into a sour little, you know, ball that I had my gallbladder removed so I could stop feeling that way, but it didn't work. And it's just, I'm happy today. I'll tell you that. I'm pleased today, not before, not previously, but now it's all happening.
See, I had no idea that people felt that way. You know, like I thought I was sort of doing my little thing and like, oh, I want to do a trading card. I think it'd be fun. I had no idea there was this undercurrent of like resentment and hatred toward
me. Absolutely. A lot of people, they're so furious until you address them directly. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I like that guy. He's nice. I like that kid. He's doing a lot of good stuff. But before that, no, I don't care. I don't know who he is. It doesn't matter to me. Oh, he's doing it. Oh, Kickstarter? I don't care. What? I don't even know what that is.
Well, I'm glad that I know this now, so I can approach people correctly in the future.
Yeah, that's a load off of my mind as well.
Now, let's talk about you for a second. You are a nonstop drawing machine. You're primarily known as a webcomic artist for, let me name them off, Brood Hollow, Chainsaw Suit, Star Slip, but you're also a podcaster, a vidcaster, a writer, a producer, and, if I may, an ambassador to geeks everywhere.
So, boy, I hope so. I like that.
You are an ambassador to geeks everywhere. Every time I see, I think that if we had a, you know, if geek were a continent, you would be our ambassador.
I think Will Wheaton would probably get a little mad at that. He'd be upset.
Well, you
I'm
would,
okay if I would be like a regional, like a,
a
like
mayor?
On the board of directors. Not a mayor. Like, what's below that? Some sort of a public servant.
Yeah.
I'm a clerk.
A clerk. Now, what do they call those guys? They actually have names for those people.
I'm blanking on it.
Yeah, it's not exactly like they're not elected officials. They're just sort of like councilmen or something.
They kind of come when you elect an official. You know, like the elected official has these groups that he's already installed, and you kind of know the group you're going to get if you elect this guy. So I've been vouched for by somebody who works beneath him. And I'm here. That's why I've arrived.
Well, there you go. Now, with all these accolades, what would you say has been the secret to your sex success so far?
Ooh, let's answer that first question. The secret of my success, gosh, okay, I can answer this in not a snarky way. I think it's going to sound snarky. You, for people to like what you do, you have to like what you do. I mean, I think one of the things that we've talked about a lot in webcomics is you get the question, how do you get popular? How do you get an audience? How do you get people to follow you? And the answer is, well, you have to make something that's good. And that's a terrible answer because how do you know that you're doing that?
Right.
But the best way to do it is to do what you like. And I feel like there are a lot of people who end up on the wrong path making content because they think they're supposed to make a certain type of content to a certain type of audience, you know?
Yeah.
And that ends up, your audience will know before you do that you don't like what you're making. They can tell that you are running out of steam on it. So if you're excited, then you will reach the people who are also excited about that thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a lot of people feel that, you know, especially with geek culture, I hate that word too, even though I'm doing something called Geek Week.
I do too.
You know what I'm saying though? Like with geek culture, we have to make something that's like, that has someone with funny hair or glasses or something and talks about video games. And, you know, that's not really what makes the best content. Look at something like Community, which talks heavily to geek culture, but is not necessarily overtly what you would call geek. So,
yeah, I think I'm not crazy about that type of label. So it's hard because it's hard to say I don't like the label without it sounding like I don't like the people.
Right.
But it's not true. And it would be ridiculous for me to claim that I'm not among them. Right? I don't like geeks. I don't like all these nerds.
You just don't want to be called one, is what it is.
Yeah. I feel like we need to.
Well, you know, it's funny because this podcast, obviously, and this art project is called Geek a Week. So this is like the anti-Geek a Week interview. It's one of the first ones I've done.
It's just another week.
It's just another week.
A week.
Now, if you were to stop what you were doing tomorrow, take up a totally different career than what you're doing right now, what do you think you'd choose to do?
Boy, do I have to not be any type of creative?
No, you don't. You can actually be in another field of creative, but if you weren't drawing comics for a living, what do you think you'd do?
I think I would end up, gosh, that's tough, because then I don't think it would work out as well. But and then it's like I'm thinking 6 years down the road when I'm like, that didn't pan out. Okay, well, what would I be doing then? I guess I would be a computer programmer again, because that's what I used to be.
That's what you started.
Although
as.
I've been far enough away from it now where I don't think I have the chops. I mean, it's what I went to school for. But it would require me relearning the new standards, everything. Yeah. I'm real mad about divs, you know? I'm like, tables were fine. Why did we have to... And the only environment I worked in was Visual Studio, also. That tells you something. I think I wouldn't want to go back there, but it seems like potentially the most stable thing. But if I had to stay in a creative discipline, I think I would end up doing, this is a cheat. I would end up doing animation. Like I would end up doing like YouTube type content.
Yeah.
Because I am trying to do more of that. We're trying to do that, Mikey and I. It was sort of his child said, "Yeah, like doing animation? You like to do this type of stuff in Flash? I said, yes. Why aren't you doing it now? And I said, well, I don't know. I have time for it. But he said, why don't you do? Pay some talented people to do it for you so that you don't have to do all of it? Why didn't I think of that?
Because you want to save money. That's why.
That's exactly what it is.
I've had the same question posted to me as well. Like, you should just be doing animation. I'm like, yeah, I'll be having to sit there and learn the animation studio thing or whatever, and it's going to take more time than actually creating content.
Right. Well, I also think that I don't, I get very precious, and I'm not good at delegating. So even things that I would need an intern to do, like, or somebody to do spot colors for me, which is not hard, and I have a palette, and it's just somebody else has to go in with the paint bucket, you know?
Right.
But then I'm like, I don't want somebody to have to do that. That's tedium. Well, I'll do it. But that's exactly the type of thing that I should get off of my plate.
Yeah, that's, I'm with you on there. You personally feel that you shouldn't have to hire somebody to fill in your colors for you.
Yes, because that's menial work.
Yeah.
I want to do that, and I'd feel so bad giving it to somebody else to do.
Now, here is my Barbara Walters question for you, Chris. Don't cry. It's okay.
I was ready.
you just get ready to cry at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
I like that. What is the trait you most value in others?
Ooh, in others.
Yes.
That's a great question. How often are you complimented on your questions?
All the time.
Oh, that's good to know.
It's great.
I value, above all things, communication. I value a desire to communicate. And whatever those, in whatever way you find, like, as long as it's full and open and, you know what I mean? I'll tell it like anecdotally. Like, this is only a piece of why I think communication is so important, and being able to understand one another and making the effort to do that is so important. It's such a tiny example I'm going to give you. But when somebody comes up to my table at a convention, and I know that I'm known, if you like what I do, for having a specific cadence and a specific sense of humor and a sensibility. But if you come up to me at the table and you regurgitate that sensibility back at me, I don't want to interact with that.
Right.
I would much rather, I know it comes from a place of, I don't want to be a boring person. I don't want to go up there with my dumb job and my stupid things, and all I'm going to say is I like your work. I would much rather have that and have that conversation, because I will talk to you much longer on that for 20 minutes, and it's not boring to me. You know, I want to know you as a human being. Come and talk to me as a human being. Don't come and regurgitate my stuff back at me.
That is good advice, because I have seen that firsthand with other people, other celebrities, and I'll see a fan come up to a table. I myself have never had this happen, because I'm, of course, not as well known as you or some of the other people at these conventions. But people will come up at a table, and usually it's like a voice actor, and they'll start doing the voices of the actor to the person.
They're doing their job for them, yes, in front of them.
So this is good advice. If you're listening to this and you go to conventions, do not do what Chris is saying, or go up to a voiceover actor and start imitating them as their character.
Right.
It's not only, it's painful, and it's just not right. Just be human. Which I think.
Yeah. Now, I don't mind being asked to do something that they like. That's okay.
What do you mean,
that's
like draw something that they like?
Exactly. Or do a voice that they like, or make a reference that they like. That's okay. I'll pepper that in. That's okay.
Okay. Okay.
But when you, yeah, but if it's just like memes, if it's just not thoughts, if it's so fragmented, it's like I'm interacting with a I'm feeling lucky button on Google. Like, I don't want that.
This is great advice. And there should be like a book of etiquette for conventions, honestly.
I'll tell you something else. And here's another thing. I don't think you can have those books and have them be effective, because the people who need to internalize them are the ones who won't. And the people who have already internalized them and are very nervous are the ones who will. So it's the decent people. If I say, I don't want you to come up to me at a table and do my jokes back at me, all the people who are already nervous and who weren't ever going to do it to me and were going to be perfectly wonderful people are now saying, oh God, I wonder if I did that. I wonder if I did that inadvertently. I won't go. I won't approach. But then the people who do it all the time go, well, that's not me, because that's why they do it. So now that's all I'll get from now on.
Well, they'll make great anecdotes, if anything else. So
yes, they, I guess, for sufficient values of great.
Here we get into the more geeky questions of the interview, Chris. What geeky television show, book, or movie do you feel has had the greatest influence on you as a creator?
Honestly, so when I was young, well, very young, like 3, 4, 5 years old, my dad bought a Betamax cassette player, one of those old Betas.
Right.
And I think the first cassette you could buy, if not among the first, was 2001, A Space Odyssey. And my dad would watch it. And I was too young to know anything of what I was looking at.
Right.
And it left me with a lot of nightmares. Like, there's a lot of, like, stark, open space and silence and eye imagery, a lot of eye symbolism. There's eyes all over that movie. And then the end, of course, is completely,
right.
Don't let your child watch that when they are, you know, pre-verbal. You know, they don't know what they're receiving. And that movie has had so much of an impact on what I think is interesting. I'm so fascinated by artificial intelligence, on the types of things that, I mean, obviously a sci-fi as well. The type of horror that I enjoy, it's, you know, it's very mood driven and very slow and very foreign feeling, because everything that followed when he got out of the into that weird room at the end, that's not straight up horror, but man, is it disconcerting, man, is it uncomfortable. So it had a huge impact on me.
Now, did you go back and rewatch it later on in life? Because obviously at age 2, it went over your head. So did you go back and explore that at a different time?
Yeah, I did. And I thought that, it made more sense having been able to understand sequential imagery. That was useful in viewing film. But I still like it, but I still have these little triggers in the movie. For example, to display Bowman's terror when we're going down that tunnel, when he takes the pot out to the monolith and then you get all the psychedelic colors.
Right, right.
They would cut back to him. They would smash back to him in the pod.
Mm-hmm.
And his face is all distorted and he's horrified. And they were stills. They were not like shots of him scared. And I couldn't, like, it was such a perfect way to display the limits of terror that this man had been driven to by what he was seeing. Oh my God. And it's so stark and sudden that just flashes on the screen. That surprised and scared the heck out of me. Why did you let me watch that, Dad?
Why did he let you watch it? Did it was your mom just out and he wanted to watch it and your mom didn't want to watch it with him? So he's like, Chris will watch it with me.
I don't know. I think I was just playing in the room at the time, because it's not like he said, no, pay attention, son. You're going to need to know all of this or the pod will come down. And
I guess it would be really mesmerizing.
Yeah. Like, I think I was just playing in the room. I remember that I used to get really scared at one part where Dave gets in the pod. He's going out to retrieve Frank, who's spinning and lost in space. And it's a long shot of the Discovery in the background, and the pod is coming at the camera from real far away and then growing and growing and growing. And I couldn't stand to look at that thing coming at me. So I turned around to not look at the screen, and the room that the TV is in at my parents' house has a big picture window behind there. So I turned around to avoid it, and no, there was behind me as well. And that moment stuck with me. That picture window, I was terrified at night of a pod being back there, of a huge eye being back there.
Holy crap.
Oh, man. Why did I do science fiction for so long? And horror was the ideal. I think that's why I'm so fond of Brood Hollow. I really thought that it was going to be kind of a throwaway, like, well, how do I get my head around this space? And Starslip was science fiction, and that's all stuff that I had thought of and dreamed about when I was in high school and junior high. And Brood Hollow, though, reaches even further back. It wasn't until I started to write it and put it down that I realized, oh, this is from my childhood. This goes back a long way.
Now, the following is a two-part question. The first part of it is, if you had to choose, do you consider yourself more of a video game person or a D&D person?
Oh, I guess because I never had a lot of friends, I guess I would say a video game person. It was just simpler to entry. The entry point was a lot lower. You just needed 50 of your parents' dollars.
Isn't that funny, though? Let me just, before I get to the second part of the question, what is your opinion on forcing, like Titanfall, obviously, is a multiplayer game, forcing you to be with other people, either online or in person? And it sort of goes against how I feel video games should be.
Yeah, I played with. I played with Mikey, and Mikey Newman, my co-host on the Chainsaw Suit podcast. I played with him for the first time, and it was the second time I'd ever played. I had so much fun with another human being that I know in a party. But before that, I thought, well, I just bought the game. I'm going to load it up. Oh, it's one of these games where it's only multiplayer, mm-hmm. even though they've kind of couched it in a campaign style setup. And I was just having no fun. I'm like, I'm not 13. I don't have the summer off to practice. Right. Like, I wish, like, I don't mind that you make me suffer through bad bot AI to play. But provided that there's a story, you know what I mean? If there was a real hard story, like a story I was engaged in and fascinated by in Titanfall, and I had to play against people who were way better than me, I would have been much more angry. But the story in Titanfall is like, I don't know, these send a robot and they punch him and this guy had to jump up there. Like there's no, the idea that there's a campaign is not even necessary, but that's okay. It's not like I got mad at Unreal Tournament for... you know, the threadbare plot and making me fight other people.
Yeah, but you could fight the AI, though. I don't know. I mean,
that's true. That is a good point. They did have bots, which yeah. I preferred to play against at all times.
It's, I don't know. I think it's an age thing. It's starting to show our age that we are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is somebody's first experience with a multiplayer game, or, you know, from a very young age. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, who would you play with? How would you play with enemies if they were not other people?
Right.
Like, the internet is just always on. Back then, bots were a necessity.
I like the bots better.
I do like the bots, though.
Yeah. So the second part of the question is, you are at your character creation screen, since you said you were a video game person.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to choose two superpowers or attributes for yourself, the ones you would push the sliders all the way to the right, what would those be and why?
Probably posture. Get real healthy posture so my back would stop hurting. And then...
that's a cartoonist problem.
Yeah, that's a... Well, I thought you were going to ask me, like, what do you make the character look like? Anything I answer is telling. It's telling about the person you're asking the question of.
Right.
Which is why it's a good question. But I do make the characters look like me.
Yeah.
But I suppose you are, and we can come back to that if you want, but I suppose if you're asking me what attributes do I prefer in a game, or just like in my life?
No,
is that where we're going?
Like superpowers, right? Like what two superpowers would you give yourself?
Gosh, I think I have tended to favor characters who are like more of the tactician and more of like the long range type of guy.
Snipers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hesitant to say sniper because whenever I choose like a pure sniper build, we're like, let me hang back and I'll pick them off. I'm terrible at it. I want the option to be able to do that. Like, I'll pick the soldier and then I'll see if I can find a sniper rifle and hang out. But yeah, I guess in the game, I like myself a lot. And so I try to reproduce that character. In Mass Effect, I got really good at making my face as Shepard. And I didn't, although he looked really Egyptian in the way that I ended up making him, because there was no beard that I was satisfied by, not even a goatee. So I ended up giving him a little thin pencil mustache and I named him Mahfouz Shepherd, and he was from the Cairo police force and he had made it all the way up the ranks, and to become humanity's, savior from the Reapers. So
the two superpowers that let me recap.
Yeah, let's see if we can find an answer on that mess.
The two superpowers would be a healthy posture and sniper ability.
Yes, and I think they're both kind of connected.
I guess so, yeah, because you'd need actually good posture to be an effective sniper.
Right, and that's probably, again, goes along with how I want an idealized version of myself in the game, because I know that in real life I would be a horrible sniper. Because if when my back's curved, like the recoil from that gun is gonna, you know, jam some of my discs, and that I'm so disappointed with myself.
Now, would you use these powers, Chris, for good or for evil, or better yet, selfish or selfless reasons?
To go back to Mass Effect, I would use them for good, and I would use them for selfless reasons, because I try to go down the renegade track in any game. And, well, it's not entirely true in any game, but in Mass Effect, it was just so over the top. You know what I mean? Like, Paragon is like, here, you have one of my med kits. Right. You look like you need it more than I do. Oh, wow, thank you. And Renegade Path is you punch the quest giver in the face, you know? Like, no, that's not what I wanted to do. Like, there was the first Mass Effect I played, and I was really fond of Rex. And there's a part where he's fighting with another one of my party members. He's having an argument, and I have the option to choose the. I feel like I'm not remembering this right, so somebody can call me on it. But I have the option to choose Paragon or Renegade at that moment. And at the moment, I'm like, this guy's overstepping his bounds. I'm gonna go Renegade and show him hard how things get done around here, because we got work to do. So I chose Renegade. And Shepard killed him. And I was like, whoa, that is too far. You kidding me, Shepard? So no, I don't. I always try to go super good. I always wanted to be like a paladin. That's the class I wanted to play. I wanted to play super nice, super good guy. The only exception was Prototype. Because it's not possible.
Right.
Because it's a game where you can pick a panicked citizen off of the ground and throw him into a brick wall. Okay. How do I play that good?
Well, maybe he, you know, maybe he was having a bad day. Maybe he, you know, he needed that. And you helped him out. He wanted to leave.
Yeah, if I just add a little, like a voice clip, whenever I pick somebody up and they say, please kill me, and they tell me a really sad story about why, and I think, wow, this guy doesn't have long anyway. I got to do it for him. I'll do it the humane way. I'll throw him into a brick wall.
Did you kill any little sisters?
No, I didn't. I couldn't do it. Like, or I'll do it. I'll say, give me some of that, Adam. I did it, and then I load the game immediately back up. Nope.
You know, I should listen. I think that is very common for webcomic artists.
Like, tend to be good people.
They tend to be good people.
I'm glad.
They just want to do what's right. And I think that's maybe just sort of a thing of like artists and comic artists in general. Not all, but I think most.
I want to listen back and find the exceptions now.
I do too. I feel that maybe Bill Amen said that he likes to be a badass, but I'd have to listen to that again.
Oh, well, I think because I'm a bad person and I want to be a good person somewhere. Bill is a good person.
And he just wants to be bad.
It doesn't surprise me he's got to exercise that somewhere.
Now, who or what do you consider to be your nemesis, Chris?
Oh, I feel like I'm going to go back to the same old well on this one, but I don't like regurgitated ideas. I don't like memes. I don't like when people yell the word science because that's not science. That's the opposite of what science wants to do. You remember the Richard Feynman, the quote, I read all of his books, but he had a problem with how a children's book was written because it talked about like why does the car move, why does their sun work, why do plants grow, and it kept saying energy is what does it. It's energy that does it. Mm-hmm. And he said to a child, you have to explain what that is. You can't just say energy does it, because the word energy doesn't mean anything. You can put any word there and say that does it, and it's just as meaningful. You have to explain what it is for it to have any value. So when people go like, I'm going to do a science on, you know, and it's kind of tongue in cheek.
Right.
But I'm still like, no, don't do that. That's what that science doesn't want you to do that. Science wants you to express ideas, not reduce them into much more easily expressible, you know, until all the ideas are actually removed from it. The word science itself does not mean anything.
It's like a go-to word.
Yeah. It's just a placeholder. that bugs me. That bugs me a lot. That's my nemesis, and it will defeat me, and it has defeated me.
So memes are your nemesis?
I think it's safe to say, and I think anybody who knows me listening to this is like, yeah, that's what I would have said.
I have to agree with you, Chris. I am with you on that.
There you go.
Sometimes there's a good meme. Other times, not so much.
Oh, early on, I think they can be funny. I'm not opposed to them as an idea, because it is still an idea. But they get real worn to a nub quick for me, I think.
Yes, within a few hours sometimes on the internet.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the folks I've talked to for this podcast and this project wear their heart on their sleeve as far as their geekiness goes. But is there anything you secretly geek out about? Something that people would not know that you were interested in? I know you're a very public figure. You do a lot of podcasts, webcomic, content all the time. What is not? I don't know if it's necessarily a like a guilty pleasure, but something that would surprise people.
As far as surprising, I don't know. I feel like people might already know that I like really crummy pop music, and it has a lot to do with when I was in college. I had a friend who liked a lot of different types of music, way more different types than I liked. And my horizon opened up because I actually did not listen to music in high school and before. I never listened to it. And if I did listen to it, it was my dad's old, like, kind of, I'm trying to think of the word. It's not corporate rock, arena rock. But, I mean, it's kind of like that. It's like Bob Seger and all that.
Okay.
Electric Light Orchestra I still like a lot.
Okay, okay.
But those were the go-tos. But I never explored on my own. It wasn't until I was in college that I bought a Queen's Greatest Hits collection.
Really?
And I was like, ooh, like this is the first choice I've made. Like I never had bought music or sought music before that. Anyway, but my friend liked jazz a lot. And he liked that super high-level, like almost mathematical, like noise. Like it's, you know, obviously there's a pattern to it because they're all playing it and it wasn't written down before.
Mm-hmm.
And they all know what to do. And he's like, listen how complex this is. And to me, and maybe this is doing jazz a disservice, but I thought, yes, but it's because it's so theoretical and they can go to all these new places that I don't think of it as the same challenge. Pop music is so simplistic How do you make the same four chords sound good this many times? You know, that I think of as a real interesting thing.
Well, I can answer that question. I think it's lyrics.
I don't think so.
Really? Because I think that, like, I can hear a song and be like, oh, that's a catchy tune. But I've thought about this recently, and I think, man, this song would suck if it wasn't for this, the lyrics that make it happen. You know what I mean? Like the words that actually make it happen.
Well, I'll agree with you if the words are fun. They don't have to be good, but they have to be fun.
Yeah.
Because I like plenty of songs where I know the lyrics are so stupid, but I just need something to do with my tongue as I sing the notes. You know what I mean?
Like, what is
I have to be saying words because I can't be scatting.
What is the song like that is your kryptonite? Like the pop song that is your kryptonite?
I don't know if I have any one specific go-to, but I will have phases where I will, like, for example, recently I made fun of, I found out that Train, the band Train.
I was just going to say Train.
Has wines. They also make wines, and they have a vineyard, I guess, or they partner with somebody, and they make different wines that are named after Train songs. And it's so pretentious and dumb. And I know that Train is really dumb. But after it's like, this was the best thing I heard all day. I was laughing about it all day. And then I bought Drops of Jupiter on iTunes. And it wasn't 99 cents. It was $1.29 for some reason. I don't know why they do that. But singing it very earnestly, thinking about it. So, like, you can enjoy it on two levels. It's sort of a guilty pleasure.
You can drink it. And you can also drink it in.
Oh, man, that would be the ultimate. I want to have a Train listening and tasting party.
that's the new thing. It can take hold in a place like Seattle. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, well, these things where you enjoy them ironically, but also not ironically, which is it is possible to hold the two in the same space.
I'm almost willing to bet that already exists, a Train tasting party.
Yeah, because you may find, despite yourself, aha, what a bunch of dopes. Oh, the wine is actually pretty good, you know.
And this song's not so bad either, I guess.
Yeah, the song is also, you know, a couple drinks in, it's making me cry, actually tearing up.
That's funny that you should say Train. That's the very first thing I thought of when you were, before you even said anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, Electric Light Orchestra is sort of my go-to favorite band.
There's nothing to be ashamed about with that band.
Some people would say different. It is pretty, pretty corny stuff.
It depends. Mr. Blue Sky, good.
Yeah.
Turn to Stone, maybe not.
Yeah, no, I like that one too. I like the deep cuts. I'm not like, oh yeah, Evil Woman. No, come on. Everybody knows that one. Show me the ones that were not the singles.
Yeah.
I'll listen to those albums backwards and forwards.
It's the orchestra in Turn to Stone that gets me. Anyway, for this question, it's the end of the world.
Shut your mouth. Okay.
For this question, it's the end of the world. Mm-hmm. What geeky item would you choose to save and bring with you as you explore the Mad Max-like terrain?
What geeky item?
Yeah. So like a luxury item you would bring with you.
Oh, like a comfort?
Something. Yeah, it could be whatever you want. I leave this really open-ended to you, so.
Okay. So in other words, it doesn't work. It doesn't actually work.
It doesn't have to be anything real, even. It could be something, you know, out of literature or television.
I just had a real bummer thought, but, and maybe this can be my object. I would bring with me my Star Trek Next Generation communicator badge. Not the electronic one. It doesn't make sounds. It's the metal one. One that looks like the ones on the show. And I guess every once in a while I'd tap it.
Hoping that something would happen.
Just like, maybe this time. Maybe it's real this time. Get me out of here.
That is the start of a TV show right there.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, fade in, you know, fires burning, a Chris Straub looking Egyptian person sitting in the corner tapping a communicator badge.
Hard to tell because he's because he's filthy and he's surrounded by trash and the beard is ridiculously long.
He couldn't get the right mustache.
It's been a decade and he's covered in filth and there's not even rats because you could eat a rat. He's starving to death. He peels back under layers of clothing, reveal that badge, and it's pristine because it's the only thing he cared about keeping nice.
I love that. That is a great story starter, man. You got to start writing that now.
I'm going to live it. If we have an apocalypse, don't worry about it being written.
Go to downtown Seattle and kind of like underneath that troll bridge and just
become that guy.
Become the guy.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen, though? Yes, he's crazy, but every once in a while he'll flip back his collar. Must be a Trekkie, I guess.
Here we get into some rapid fire questions, Chris.
Okay.
How would you kill a zombie?
Oh, aim for the head. What else am I going to do? What weapon?
Yeah.
I would do, depends on the type of zombie, but I'm going for like a bladed weapon or a shovel.
Nice. Mac or PC?
Mac, but I don't hate PC.
You don't have to.
No, I don't. I used to PC when I was a programmer.
Of course.
Can't do that on a Mac. Sorry, Mac. You can just do everything else on it.
Including running Windows. So.
Right.
Yeah. tabletop gaming, console gaming, mobile gaming, or none of the above?
Ooh, I wish I had more time for tabletop. I'm mostly console and mostly mobile, actually, because you can put it down in 5 minutes.
What's your game?
Lately, I was playing a lot of Smash Hit. Have you seen that?
I've heard of it, but I have not played it.
It's very soothing. It's sort of a turn your brain off and look at this pretty imagery game.
I play way too many of those games. Those are all mobile games, really.
It's sort of the go-to. Yeah, you have to be able to bring something else to the table. Yeah.
Marvel or DC?
Oh, Marvel.
Really?
Marvel. My brother is DC, and I couldn't understand it.
Who's your big character? Who's the guy?
Oh, Iron Man. When I was little, I'm stunned because I always thought of Iron Man as a fourth string guy. I mean, I know he was in the Avengers, but when I came into Iron Man, it was like in the late 80s. And I remember the one I started with. I bought it because I played the old arcade game, Captain America and the Avengers,
the
four player. I always chose Iron Man, even though I knew nothing about him. I just liked that he was ranged. Tie into the sniper thing.
Right.
But my dad took us to a comic book store and said, why don't you buy something you like? And I didn't know anything, so I bought Iron Man, and I loved it. I loved everything about that character. So it was such a surprise years and years later to find out they're doing an Iron Man movie. I'm like, no, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel if they're going to do that. But it was everything I wanted. It was a great movie. And I was so pleased to be the guy who's like, you know what? I liked Iron Man before.
That's surprising to me. I watched that Assembling a Universe recently, the Marvel show,
mm-hmm.
and I was surprised. Like at the beginning of that, when they said that, it was when they said they were going to do an Iron Man movie. Marvel's scraping the bottom of the barrel, bringing out their second tier heroes. I'm like, really? I always thought Iron Man was like top tier.
I guess he is, but maybe not for a movie. And I would always run into people when I read a lot more comics at that age, and I was like, I love Iron Man. What do you like? And they were like, oh, Iron Man, I'd never read that. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that kind of informed me as, I guess people really don't care about Iron Man.
That's weird, because I always considered him to be a top tier, but surprising.
Yeah.
In a battle royale, who would win? You versus your name nemesis, fashion designer Christopher Straub with a C. The battlefield. Who wins in a hot dog eating contest?
Ooh, gosh. I have a very small stomach. And not knowing, I know my own limitation, but I don't know his. So that kind of tips it over to him.
You think he'd take it?
Yeah, he might be able to do better. I eat with my eyes. I think I'd get to 3 hot dogs and be like, guys, I just can't do it. I don't see the point. I want to take these to a soup kitchen.
You got to dip them in water first and then
check. But at that point, it becomes academic, right? I mean, you can't. It's like, how about a hot dog inside a person contest where They just do surgery on you and put them in. We could get 40 in this guy, but we only get 38 in this guy, so he wins.
That sounds like a PAX Prime thing.
It sounds like we have a little time to plan it and get it ready.
Talk to Gabe and Tycho about that.
I think you can find the clean room.
Get the right surgeon. I think that'd be great.
They don't have to be a surgeon. They just have to know how to cut open a person, and then the emergency room can do the rest.
Where are the pockets? You know, they just need to know where the pockets are in the human body.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. In a battle royale, because you called yourself a humor scientist on your website, I saw. Humor scientists versus regular scientists, the battlefield, who's better to watch an episode of Cosmos with?
Oh, gosh. I guess the humor scientist. not that you are humorless if you are a regular scientist, what we think of as a scientist. But I haven't noticed any humor scientists pointing out the inaccuracies of Cosmos. a lot of sour faces.
It could be a funny way of watching the show.
That's true. As long as they're not making fun of it. There are some things that I don't think are that fun to make fun of, which is interesting, because I really appreciate satire.
Right.
And I appreciate that people can make jokes about things that I do not find funny, but that does not make them not funny at all. They're just not funny to me. But
now, I think you can make fun of Cosmos if only that it's that Neil deGrasse Tyson is in a teardrop-shaped ship that's flying all around the universe.
You can make fun of that, yeah. No, absolutely. Cosmos has a lot of things you could grab onto. But I was going to say the thing that I cannot make fun of, and I've tried, but it doesn't work, is Mr. Rogers.
Oh, really? You can't make fun of him?
I love him too much. Like, there's nothing funny to be done. Like, and anybody who does it, they kind of glom onto the, you know, oh, the sweater.
It's kind of cruel.
Or they turn him into a pervert or whatever. And I'm like, that's lazy. That's not really parody. That's
low-hanging fruit.
Yes. That's something I'm never a fan of. I will not eat eggplant, tomato. No low-hanging fruit.
You just made a low-hanging fruit joke.
I did. A low-hanging fruit comment. Edit that out.
No, that's great. No, that's gold. That's what's going to win me the podcast, the potty this year.
The casties. Okay.
The casties.
I'm sorry. I'm from the West Coast. That's what
okay. Yeah. That's what they call them, the potty here. So.
Oh, okay. East of the Rockies.
Exactly.
It's like Hellman's.
Now, regarding, this is the fun part, Chris, as if this hasn't been all fun, but regarding their trading card, I like to think of these as editorial-style portraits, only in cartoon format. With that in mind, is there anything you'd like to say that would help me contribute to creating the art for your card? Chris, how would you like me to draw you? And I have to put a little preamble here. I'm always intimidated and scared to draw other artists. I'm never going to get over that.
Oh, but it's your thing. That's your voice. That's your style.
I know.
What could I...
I actually had a really great idea as we were talking.
Hmm.
I can't believe...
Draw me as this shambling derelict?
With those shining
Star Trek pens?
As a zombie from The Walking Dead. No, actually, I think, and I can't believe I've never done this before, but draw someone... Actually, I have done it before, but it was for a fan, and it wasn't actually an official card. I can draw you as Tony Stark.
That's a pretty good go-to.
I'm thinking it'd be really great to do you. It's kind of like Tony Stark as he is in the Avengers on the poster of the Avengers where they have to show Robert
Downey.
He's got
the helmet off.
Yeah, exactly. But he's got the cool armor on, the Mark V or whatever. I think that can be really cool, actually.
I think that's not bad. That's not bad. I like that.
Yeah, because you've got the beard. I think you can I think that will work out really well. I can have a martini or a cocktail in your hand.
It sounds like I can't, and I am an alcoholic, so that's good. It sounds like I can't come up with. I don't have anything other than that for you.
I'm so glad you said that Iron Man was your guy.
Yeah, that's your, and plus that's your thing. Like, don't make me do your job for you. You're the one interacting with me. You're the one identifying the parts you want to play up. I think that's part of why I like, not that you're making a parody of me, but like I like the idea of caricature. I like the idea of parody for the same reason, where it's like, what do you choose to accentuate? What do you choose that's familiar when right. somebody sees it and they're like, yeah, that's exactly what they do. I've always appreciated that.
Well, I this was very, like, this is difficult because I don't know you in the same sense as, like, you know, like I know some other people. So trying to create something that I feel exemplifies you was a little bit of a challenge.
So. It could be, but somebody who's closer to the source might not have that same line on it.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
Like, I think I do a terrible job. I'm way too close.
What?
So maybe that's exactly what we need, is more of an outside look.
Well, you know, and the other thing, too, is Iron Man is such a cool character, and it's very clear to me, talking to you for the last almost hour, that you are a very cool character.
I hope so. I wasn't at a young age. It took a long time to cultivate.
Well, it's worked because it's, you know, I think you're kind of cool. You know, I kind of want to hang out with you. So,
well, thank you. Well, why don't we?
I don't know.
How do we make that possible?
Because we're all away on the other side of the country. It's hard. That distance thing is real hard.
Stupid locations. Why even have them anymore?
We're almost at the end of the Geek Week interview, Chris. I've got one more question for you before we depart. Do you have any other final words of wisdom? And keep in mind that this may end up on your trading card on the back.
Oh, no.
Is that more pressure?
Don't make me do that. Well, I like a running thought in my head, even though and I think it comes from being a storyteller, where you are trying to apply drama rules to an existence. And so sometimes you're asked to distill an idea into a story and, you know, to format it, right? And so the idea that keeps coming up with me, like in terms of thinking about, like, I don't think that life has we apply a narrative to life, right? But I keep thinking, like, what will my final thought be? What will the last conscious thought I have on this earth be? Will it be? It can't possibly be interesting. It has to just be some nonsense, right? It's going to be like, milk's bad. And then I'll be dead. And then that's the end, right? And likewise, what would I want on my tombstone? I don't want a tombstone. I want to be cremated. But what would I put on there? What would I leave everybody with? This is just a very small version of that question, and I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible at it. Oh, my God. Why would you do this to me? There's no way to do a good job.
It's the best last question you could ever ask.
Okay, so I guess it's, oh, my God, why would you do this to me? There's no way to do a good job.
Okay, I can do that. I can put that on there.
That works because my stuff tends to be very meta, so.
They'd have to listen to the whole podcast to understand.
Yeah, that's safe.
I think that was terrific. I think that was great, Chris.
I thought it was. Well, terrific was not awesome, so you're in the clear there. But I thought this was great,
yeah,
too.
That is the Geek Week interview. We did it.
That was a pleasure. That was very enjoyable.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. And you know what's funny is we've talked for almost an hour. I don't think there's anything that I would necessarily cut out of that. You know,
like I wish this was every more weeks. I wish I was multiple weeks. That's selfish.
I'm so glad to hear that because sometimes I feel like, I don't really want to do an interview. I don't really want to talk to people. You know, sometimes I get that and it's like, but I'm glad, I'm happy to hear that because I'm, you know, I want people to have fun when they're doing the interview and actually think and answer questions they don't really get to answer that often.
Yeah, I enjoy conversation. So I like to answer questions thoroughly as opposed to, oh yes, I do like that. Yeah. What else next?
Blue.
Blue is blue is the best color. Next question. We could be done in 8 minutes if that's how it ran.
Exactly.
What did you like, 2001? Yeah. You want to elaborate? No, it's good. It's a good movie.
Just go see it. You'll see what I mean.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. Send me an email. I'll tell you. I'll write a blog about it.
Yeah, just see my blog. It's all on there.
I've already said everything I want to say.
Your research, bro.
Yeah. What kind of an interview is this? You don't know anything about me. You're asking me all kinds of things.
Yeah. Why would you ask me this question about TV and movies? What's wrong with
Jeez.
You?
Jeez.
Well, I'm going to, if you can believe this, I'm really behind on my pencil sketches and everything. But I will get one out to you very soon. I want to try to carve out some time to get some pencil sketch, and I'll do that up.
I am behind on a lot of my stuff, so I completely understand.
Yeah, but yours, I'm excited to draw. I'm excited to draw your card. I think it's going to be very, very neat.
Well, I'm excited to see it. Thank you very, very much.
No problem. It was great talking to you, and you take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
All right, take care.
Yeah.
Bye. Oh, it's really wonderful to talk to Chris. Thank you so much, Chris, for talking to me for Geek Week and letting me draw you as Iron Man, which is pretty kick-ass, if I may say so myself. Also, a big thanks go out to Paul and Storm, Storm D. Costanzo especially, who is writing all the card backs for all the geeks I've been talking to. The incredibly talented Rob Gabers, who is the official music director of this podcast. The golden-throated Scott Fletcher, who was the official announcer of this podcast, and of course, the 929 Kickstarter backers of Geek of Week Year 5-2 that made this season possible. Thank you so much for opening up your little purses and pocketbooks and making Geek of Week Year 5-2 happen. By the way, did you know that this season of Geek of Week will be a collectible card game? Well, you should, because if you listen to the top of the podcast, I told you just that. It's coming out as a collectible card game, and not only that, I'm re-releasing season one of Geek of Week, the season that started it all. Which has great cards like Stan Lee, Kevin Smith, and Neil Gaiman. That will be a card game as well. Now, you can pre-order both Season 1 and Season 5 of Geek Week by going to this URL, geekaweek-y52.backerkit.com/pre-orders. Once again, that URL is geekaweek-y52.backerkit.com/pre-orders. Or you can follow Geek Week on Twitter for all the information. It's right in the profile page, and you won't, you know, all that information is right there. You can also go to my online store, which is lenperaltastore.com. Visit the Geek of Week section to pick up some limited edition decks. Seasons 2, 3, and 4 are for sale right now at lenperaltastore.com. And finally, of course, you know that I've been doing speed drawing videos of all the geeks I've been talking to. You can go and support me there if you'd like. It's a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/Len. That's Patreon, patreon.com/Len. And throw me a couple dollars or so and, help me support my speed drawing habit. Notice how I added the drawing to that. Anyhow, Artist Month will continue next week with another great person who is a great artist and someone I really admire. Until then, we will see you on the next episode of Geek Week. I'm Len Peralta. Take care. That was a